This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah, alhamdulillah, salallahu alayhi wa sallallahu alayhi wa sahbihi wa man wala, thumma amma ba'd, to proceed. So we're going over al-qa'ad al-faqhiyya, legal maxims. We are calling this the coherence of sharia, and maybe jamal al-sharia in Arabic or something, or kamal al-sharia. So today, inshallah, remember the last time we did not finish the actions that do not require an intention. So this is where we stopped the last time. Today, inshallah, we will finish al-a'mal allati la tahtaj ila niyya, or the actions that do not require intention. And then we will start shurut sihhat al-niyya, or the conditions of validity of intention. And two groups here when it comes, or like two big categories when it comes to the validity of intention. When is a niyya valid? One group is, the positive criteria, and these are three criteria. The three criteria that you usually find in the books of fiqh, in the books of furu' or the books of fiqh, they usually say tajib ala al-muslim al-baligh al-aqil. You know, the salah is required from the Muslim who's baligh, basically adult and aqil, sane. So Islam is one of them. Al-aql, basically reason, as manat al-taklif or basis for accountability is one of them. And tamyiz, discernment, to be discerning, is one of them. So Islam, aql, and tamyiz, Islam, reason, and discernment. When it comes to the other category, that's the absence of nullifiers. So the absence of nullifiers, nullifiers of the niyya, nullifiers of a valid niyya, are many. Therefore, we will not be able to finish this in one or two even lectures. This will be the subject matter of the next two or three lectures. So today, we will talk about the actions that do not require intention, and we will talk about the conditions, we will talk about these three conditions of validity: the Islam, al-aql, al-tamyiz, Islam, reason, sanity, and discernment. Okay, so what are the actions that don't require an intention? Al-a'mal allati la tahtaj ila niyya. Do not require. Intention. So we have to ask ourselves, why do we need the niyyah? And if we know why we need the niyyah, we know the actions that don't require a niyyah. So why do you need a niyyah? We've talked about this before. You need a niyyah to sort out ada from ibadah and to sort out the ibadat among themselves. So what do you mean by sorting out ada from ibadah? Well, if you are fasting because you're on this sort of intermittent fasting program, you probably that probably would not earn you any reward if that's what it is for, if that's all what it is for. But if you're fasting to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if you're doing the sort of the Muslim fast, dawn to sunset, to please Allah, you are getting rewarded for this. So that's an example of how you sort out ada from ibadah. Or if you take a shower just because you want to take a shower, litabarrud, because it's hot and you want to feel cool, and take a shower for as ghusl, a ritual ghusl, that sorts out ada from ibadah. And then you need to sort out ibadat from among themselves. And so you need to sort out the fard from the wajib, the fard from the mustahab, or the wajib from the mustahab. You need basically sometimes also the niyyah would be needed to sort out different tasarrufat or different legal conducts. You know, sort out the difference between hadiyya and qard and rishwa, you know, the difference between giving someone a gift or giving someone a bribe or sadaqah or charity. So in light of that, where do we not need a niyyah? So one of the things, and I have put it here in as the second, but it may be the first. The first thing are ibadat, you know, which will be surprising that you don't need a niyyah for ibadah. But there are the ibadat that don't require a niyyah because they are distinct by their very essence. So faith in Allah, fear from Allah, reliance on Allah, hope in Allah. The niyyah itself does not require a niyyah. You know, so the niyyah to please Allah does not require a niyyah. The niyyah itself is ibadah, and it doesn't require a niyyah, because otherwise you go into tasalsul, which is infinite regression. And then these ibadat don't require a niyyah, because you don't need to require a niyyah to have to love Allah, to have fear from Allah, to have hope in Allah. These things don't require niyyah because they are distinct by their very essence. They are just, they don't require niyyah to sort them out from anything. Now, so these are certain ibadat that don't require niyyah because they are distinct by their very essence. And then you have al-aadat, don't require niyyah. Keep in mind, we have one qaida that will be consistent with us all the time. This qaida is la thawaba illa biniyyah. There is no reward without intention. La thawaba illa biniyyah. So la is no, thawab is reward. Illa except by intention or with intention. This is basically consistent. So, you know, all the time, you will have to have an ayah to have the reward of the action. Now, we will come to the scenario where you do things spontaneously because you have just trained yourself to be a good person. And we will talk about this particular scenario. Like if you do things, you know, without much thought because you have made those sort of virtues and good qualities second nature for you. You do them just spontaneously. So if you see like a thirsty dog and you give them water and you don't bring on the niyyah, and keep in mind, bringing on the niyyah all the time is superior. But if you see a thirsty dog, give them water without bringing on a good niyyah. We will come to, you know, address this in some detail. But in general, the good news, until we come to address it in some detail, you'll be rewarded. Abu Sulaiman al-Darani said, takfi niyyat al-Islam, the niyyah, rahimahullah, said the takfi niyyat al-Islam. This was reported from him by Ibn Rajab in Jama' al-Ulum al-Hikam, I believe. So takfi niyyat al-Islam, the niyyah of Islam is sufficient, you know, which means what? When you, niyyat al-Islam is the niyyah of surrendering to God, submitting to God. قُلْ إِنَّ صَلَاتِي وَنُسُكِي وَمَحْيَا وَمَمَاتِي لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. You know, my salah and my nusuk, my prayer and my ritual, my life and my death are all for Allah. So when this is basically your vision in life, this is your mission in life, then you will not need a specific niyyah for every act to be rewarded for it. And once you have trained yourself to be a good person for the sake of Allah, everything that you do as a second nature will, inshallah, count for you. Now, this is not to mean that bringing on a good niyyah saliha, istihdar al-niyyah saliha, is not superior. It is superior. But just in case you don't get to bring it on. So, la thawaba illa biniyyah will be consistent. So then the second thing that we talk about is that we don't need niyyah for al-adat or, you know, customary actions. So al-ibadat allati tatamayyaz binafsiha, al-mutamayyiza binafsiha, distinct ibadah, doesn't need a niyyah. The customary actions don't need an ayah. But la thawaba illa biniyyah. You don't get rewarded except if you have a good niyyah. So when you eat or sleep or do any of, you know, the customary things, that does not require an ayah, but you get rewarded if you have a good niyyah. So what else would not require an ayah? At-turuq will not require an ayah. Basically abstentions would not require an ayah. Certainly bring on a good ayah that is superior. So when you know, abstentions. You abstain from a lot of things, you know, all the time. So abstaining from bad things will earn you a reward if you have an aya. And hopefully, the same applies to what we said earlier about doing things as a second nature because you have trained yourself, you've dedicated your life to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you've trained yourself to be a good person in general. So hopefully this will apply here as well. So abstentions don't require an niyyah. What else would not require niyyah? Ibra doesn't require an niyyah. Ibra, which means clearing the rights of others, clearing rights of others. So if you pay someone off or repay them, you know, or something, you're indebted, then you pay them back and you don't bring on any particular niyyah, although superior when you have a niyyah. But if you don't, did you repay them or not? You did. Does it count or not? It counts. Like you're done. The sort of the debt is relieved. As you're not in debt anymore. So Ibra, which is clearing the rights, does not require an aya. Before we talk about itlaf, did we miss anything? I don't think we missed anything. So itlaf would be the next one. Itlaf would not require itlaf. So basically, destruction of life or property or whatever. That's itlaf. So destruction of things, would make you accountable even if you don't have an aya. Which means what? Accountable in what sense? Not in the criminal sense, in the civil sense. Which means what? Like you're liable. The daman is not basically waived because you didn't mean it. So when you kill someone by mistake, when you destroy a property by mistake, are you sinful? No. Are you liable? Yes. So this is the difference between the criminal case and the civil case. For us, you are not sinful, you're still liable. Meaning what? You have to compensate the people that you destroyed their property. Even if you are insane, even if you are a child, you've destroyed a property, then you will have to compensate the people. You've killed someone, then you will have to pay the diyah. And if you kill someone by mistake, the diyah will come out of the aqila, which is the paternal kin, that we need to pay the diyah on your behalf. But the kafara, or the expiation, as we will come to this, talk about in detail, will come from your own money. So you're liable even though you didn't mean it. But the fact that he didn't mean it does not mean that you're not liable. So what is the benefit in this? What is the benefit in making someone liable even if they didn't mean it? The benefit is for people to be more careful about other people's lives and properties, you know, to be more careful. You know, some people are not careful about their own well-being, and they just tend to ruin everything they lay their hands on. So you need to understand that you will be liable regardless. So you have to be more careful. And then certainly I want you to go through the footnotes. Like, for instance, you will read this statement from كشاف القناع وعمد الصبي والمجنون خطأ لا قصاص فيه لأنه عقوبة غير المكلف ليس من أهلها ودية على العاقلة حيث وجبت في الخطأ والكفارة في ماله في الخطأ وما أجري مجرى. Which will translate to the intentional act of a child or an insane person is considered a mistake, خطأ, with no retaliation, قصاص, involved because it is a punishment. Qisas is a punishment. Retribution is a punishment. And those not legally accountable are not subject to it, not subject to punishment. The blood money is due from the aqila, the paternal kin, the paternal kin responsible for the blood money, where it is required, and the expiation or kafara is due from the wealth of the perpetrator. Okay, so now these are the things that don't require any distinct ibadat, that are distinct by their essence. They don't require a niyyah. The niyyah itself is a ibadah, doesn't require a niyyah. Customary actions, unless you want the reward. Abstentions, unless you want the reward. Ibra, unless you want the reward. You know, bring on a good niyyah when you pay people back. Destruction. And destruction, we said what it means here, that a niyyah is not required, meaning even if it's not meant, even if you didn't mean it, you'll still be liable in the civil sense, not the criminal sense. Then conditions of validity of the niyyah. The next topic we will talk about is shurut sahat niyyah, or the conditions of validity of the niyyah. And we said two big groups. There are things that we need to have. There are things that we should avoid to have a valid niyyah. Things that are avoid, basically the nullifiers of the niyyah, we will defer them until next week. The things that we will need to have are three. One, two, three. Islam, aql or sanity, / reason, and tamyiz, which is discernment. Discernment. Tamyiz. Okay. Let's start with Islam. And by agreement, Islam is required for the validity of the niyyah. Islam is required. Faith is the basis for valid intentions. And that is by agreement. This is a matter of consensus. And we may come to speak about this in more detail. You know, the actions of the non-believers, they'll be rewarded for them in this life. So, ishtirat al-niyyah or ishtirat al-islam for the niyyah is a complicated issue. We'll address this shortly. But Islam in general is a requirement for a valid niyyah. And I'll read this particular paragraph from Matalib Uli Nuha. Matalib Uli Nuha is a very important Hanbali book. So it is a book by Imam al-Rahaybani, and a very important Hanbali book. So in Matalib Uli Nuha it says, فلا تصح الصلاة بدونها وشرط صحتها أينية إسلام وعقل وتمييز فلا تصح من كافر ومجنون وغير مميز وشرط صحتها أيضا علم بمنوي قال في الاختيارات النية تتبع العلم فمن علم ما يريد فعله قصده ضرورة. Okay, so in Matalib Uli Nuha it says, thus Salah is not valid without it, without a proper niyyah. And its validity, that's the validity of the niyyah, is conditioned upon Islam, aql, and tamyiz. So it is not valid from a non-believer, an insane person, or a non-discerning person. Additionally, its validity is conditioned upon knowledge of the intended action. As mentioned in al-ikhtiyarat, niyyah follows knowledge. So whoever knows what they want to do, their intention follows by necessity. So as long as you know what you want to do, the intention follows. So you don't need, the niyyah is not that complicated. You know, some people, you know, obsess about niyyah. If you know what you're doing and you're intending to do it, that's it. That's the niyyah. So the niyyah follows the knowledge by necessity. So you know that you're going to pray Asr now. That's it. That's your niyyah. You know that you are going to pray Asr now. You know that you're going to pray Dhuhr now. And certainly this is the Imam Ibn Taymiyyah's emphasis, because he was concerned about the people who obsess about everything, including obsessing about the niyyah. So people would actually spend like, and it's still true for some people, they would spend 5-10 minutes before the prayer to bring on the niyyah and to make sure that they bring on the right niyyah. So he is trying to say, once you know what you're doing, that's your niyyah. Your niyyah is basically a matter of the heart. And once you know what you're doing, that is your niyyah. It counts as your niyyah. Anyway, having said that, alhamdulillah, we all here have that condition. And then there are certain exceptions from this condition, the condition of Islam. There are certain things where Islam is not required for the validity of the niyyah. The first thing that we will discuss here is the ghusl of Ijabiyyah. You know, so if a Muslim man is married to a Jewish or a Christian woman, does she need to make ghusl after her period for him to be able to have intimacy with her? So Imam Abu Hanifa said, no, she doesn't need to, although if she does it, although he would favor if she does it, but he says it's not needed because she's not eligible for it. She's not eligible for the ibadah of ghusl. So Imams Malik and Shafi and Ahmad said it is required, it is needed. But then they would disagree. So Imam Malik and Shafi'i would validate her niyyah here in particular. And Imam Ahmad would not validate the niyyah, but would say that, you know, the action is still required. The niyyah is not valid, and the niyyah is waived here. The action is not waived, the niyyah is waived. So it's complicated. But bottom line is, the three Imams, Malik and Shafi'i and Ahmad, they would still require a ghusl. What if she completely refuses? That's a different issue. You know, what if she is Muslim and she refuses? You know, so they would say that she would be forced to have to make ghusl. And that is basically because of the right of the husband. But that's what it is, you know, in terms of that requirement. So anyway, like you want to marry someone who's compatible, just to avoid all the... Then the second one is zakah. The zakah from the apostate. So let's say someone is a Muslim and God forbid, they apostatize after their zakat becomes due on them, after the zakat becomes due. You're like, your zakat due date is Ramadan 1st, and then you apostatize, God forbid, Ramadan 3rd. The zakat became due on you, you didn't pay it yet. So Imam Ahmad would say, if the imam takes it, seizes it, takes it, it will count. It will count fi ahkam ad-dunya. It will count zahiran fi ahkam ad-dunya, exteriorly. Does it count interiorly? So there are two different positions in the madhab when it comes to the interiorly. Like, let's say you accept Islam back. You take, you know, you come back to Islam. You return to Islam on Ramadan 5th. The imam or the sultan had taken the zakah from you, because here they're basically saying that the zakah is the right of the poor in your money. You, like, it doesn't matter. It's one of the haquq, and it will be treated as a haqq here of the ibad. We would prioritize here, since you have, you know, apostatized, we will prioritize haqq al-ibad, or the right of the people, and then we will take the zakat according to Imam Ahmad. and give it to the deserving recipients, then if you come back to Islam, we will not retake it from you. Should you pay it off when you come back to Islam? And there are two positions within the madhab. One position says, yes, you must make up, because when it was taken from you, it was taken without a niyyah. You didn't have a niyyah. It was taken, the sultan took it from you. So you should still make up when you come back to Islam. And the other position said no, you don't have to. Keep in mind here that there is a slight distinction between the Hanbali and the Shafi'i position on this issue, because the Hanbali position says that if you, like Ramadan 1st became due on you, apostatized, God forbid, Ramadan 3rd, if you pay it on Ramadan 4th, while you are an apostate, you pay by yourself. I don't know how, but anyway, like you decide to pay it because they will come after you. So you just decide to pay. You're not doing it for Allah, but you decide to pay it. So Imam Shafi'i, or the Shafi'i position here is that it would count. Imam Ahmad says, no, it doesn't count, because your action is invalid since he did not have the right intention. So what if the imam takes it from you? Imam Ahmad says it counts because the imam's action is valid. He has the right intention. So if he takes it from, you get it? A little complicated, but, you just read about it. Then the other issue that wouldn't require a valid niyyah is al-kaffarat. Kaffarat, which are expiations, don't require a valid niyyah. Such as in oaths, such as in mistaken killing. So whether you're old or young, whether you are Muslim or not, the kafara will come out of your wealth, without requiring a valid niyyah. So al-kaffarat, or expiations, don't require a valid niyyah. That's just like in the case of oaths and in the case of a mistaken killing, for instance. Now, certainly, we have said before, reward is contingent upon the niyyah. The reward goes with the niyyah, hand in glove. They're linked. But note that in these exceptions, the jurists consider the rights of the husband in the purification of the kitabiyya woman, the rights of the poor in taking zakah from an apostate, the rights of society in the validity of non-Muslims' oath, and the obligation of kafara when violated, and the punitive aspect in kafarat in general, because kafarat have a punitive aspect. They have the qurba aspect. The kafara expiation has a qurba aspect, because when, like, a good person would pay the kafara to truly make up and to truly, seek Allah's forgiveness and so on. So it has a qurba aspect and it has a punitive aspect. When they validated it without niyyah, they observed the punitive aspect in the kafara, not the qurba aspect in the kafara. So some of the scholars, Sheikh Saad al-Shithri, who has a commentary on al-Qawa'id al-Sa'diyya, he has contended that Islam should not be a requirement for a valid niyyah, that people's actions will not be accepted without Islam, but we should not say that Islam is required for a valid niyyah, because he said that there are just too many exceptions for this qaida to be a qaida anyway, because he says that there are numerous exceptions, and he mentioned among them divorce, sale, vow, oath. All of these things basically are accepted. They are liable, accountable, and their niyyah is considered in all of these actions. So perhaps Islam is a condition for niyyah in acts of qurba, or in the entitlement to reward in the hereafter, or a primary condition for the validity of acts of worship, followed by the conditions of sincerity and adherence, or niyya, and correctness. The evidence for this includes many verses and hadiths. Among them, if you were to associate others with Allah, your deeds would surely become worthless or in vain. So, in general, nobody is contending with the requirement of an niyya for the reward in the hereafter. Nobody's contending with that. Just like, is a niyya needed, or considered, you know, is the niyya considered from a non-believer? In certain cases, we've mentioned some exceptions, but other scholars have mentioned other exceptions, that when it comes to divorce, we hold them by their niyya, just like Muslims are treated on the basis of their niyya in divorce. When it comes to vows, when it comes to things of that nature, if we were to judge between them, then we would certainly consider their niyya and sales and things of that nature. When we judge between them, we would certainly consider their niyya as we consider the niyya for Muslim. Next to Islam is al-aql wa tamyiz. Al-aql wa tamyiz. Al-aql is sanity, reason, and there are a few papers on accountability for someone who's feeble-minded, because there is the insane person, and then there is the sane person. But there are, you know, it's like a spectrum, you know, sometimes, and some people are almost there where you would wonder, are they accountable or not? Because they're not there completely. But here we will consider this a binary. And if you are interested, I can share the papers with you, but we will consider it a binary here. And the binary here is sane and insane. And if you are insane, then your niyya is not valid. Your niyya is not valid, and you're not accountable to begin with. So in Ibn al-Najjar's Ma'unat ul-Nuha, Sharh al-Muntaha, al-Muntaha is a book that Ibn al-Najjar himself wrote, and he wrote a commentary on. So Ma'unat ul-Nuha is his own commentary on his own matn, which is al-Muntaha. So Ibn al-Najjar says, وَيُنْوَى الْغُسْلَ عَنْ مَيِّتٍ وَمَجْنُونَةٍ غُسِّلَ لِتَعَذْرِ النِّيَّ مِنْهُمَا. The intention of ghusl is made for a deceased or on behalf of a deceased person and an insane person who's being washed, because it is impossible from them. So the deceased will not make an niyyah, and the in person is not able to make an niyyah. So now this is the sanity part, or the reason part, but they are interconnected, you know, tamiz and sanity. So let us say, let's talk about the tamiz a little bit, which is discernment. Discernment. So what is tamiz? Or discernment. Tamyiz or discernment is, you know, some people basically attach the number to it, and, you know, according to the madhab, the number is seven. Seven is the number, 7 years of age is the number for reaching tamyiz or discernment. That's according to the madhab. In the madhab, six was mentioned, ten was mentioned, but you know, the dominant view in the madhab is seven. What do we mean, like in the Madhab 607 mentioned, and you know, some scholars that are important in the Madhab mentioned 6, and some more important scholars in the Madhab mentioned 10. But the dominant view in the Madhab is 7. And there is another view in the Madhab that is not the dominant view, but it is close to the dominant view, which is what? That the fawat, it varies. No, puberty is not. We're not talking about majority. We're not talking about adulthood here. We're talking about discernment. Discernment. So majority or adulthood is not required for the niyyah. Majority or adulthood is required for an obligation of certain, you know, for accountability in general. Accountability in general. Although in the Hanbali Madhab there is this variant position, which is not the dominant view in the Madhab, that discerning children are also accountable. But that's not the dominant view in the Madhab. Anyway, so discernment varies according to a less sort of dominant or a less a lesser view in the Madhab. So it varies. الَّذِي يَفْهَمُ الْخِطَابُ وَيَرُدْ بِجَابٍ صَحِيحٍ, or the person who comprehends the speech and gives appropriate answers is the discerning child. And they said it varies because comprehension varies. You know, kids' comprehension varies. Some of the kids, you know, reach this earlier. Some reach this later. Some people never reach it. then... So there are certain exceptions. There are certain exceptions here when it comes to... remember, you know, what, before I forget, when we came to knowing the intended, knowledge of the intended, I didn't basically separate this because it's a given. You have to have knowledge of the intended. Otherwise, you can't have an iyyah without knowing what you're intending. You have to have knowledge of the intended. There is like a little exception here, which is the so-called ihram al-mubham. It's an ambiguous ihram. You get into a state of ihram to do the rituals, the nusuk of hajj and or umrah, and you basically make ihram like the ihram. You get in a state of ihram that is like the ihram of someone else. So, like you say, you're like a husband and wife going to Hajj, and then the wife, for instance, or the husband, doesn't know what the other spouse is making ihram. Like you miss the flight, and your husband goes first, and you want to make ihram now before the miqat. And then you didn't know if your husband is making tamattu or Quran or ifrad or what. You can make ihram just like the one your husband made or the one your wife made. And that is unspecified, but it is still acceptable because Ali radiallahu anhu made ihram like the one the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam made. He did not specify. And the Prophet did not correct him, and it was accepted. Therefore, it's basically valid without complete knowledge of the intended. There is still a nusuk. You're still going to, you know, Mecca. There is still a nusuk there. But is it Hajj alone? Is it Hajj and Umrah combined? Is it Umrah then Hajj afterwards? And between them there is Tahallul. You're not sure what you want to do, so you make ihram, the same ihram of someone else, and then it would count and it would be valid. Having said that, Hajj and Umrah are very special because the requirement of tamyiz for the validity of niyyah is not even, there is no even such a requirement when it comes to Hajj and Umrah. Because a child, a baby, a newborn, can make Hajj and Umrah. And that's because a woman basically lifted her child up to the Prophet ﷺ and said, "Ali hadha hajj?" And he said, "Na'am wa laki hajj." He said, "Yes, and you will have a reward." So since the Prophet ﷺ said this, it is basically to comfort the people who need to take their kids to hajj with them or need to take their kids to umrah with them, that their kids will also get a reward. It will also count for their kids, and they will get a reward. So both the child and parent will get a reward. A child or wali will get a reward. Now, the last thing that we wanted to mention, so it's clear now that the requirement tamyiz is, you know, tamyiz is not required in Hajj and Umrah, that knowledge is not required in the type of ihram. Otherwise, all of these would apply. So, and the thing that will apply all the time is la thawaba illa bi niyyah. There is no reward without niyyah. Now, and I want you just to remember this because you want to remember, you want to have a foundation when you get into controversial issues. Just make sure that you're not dismissing scholarly positions that are a little bit different or a little bit eccentric or a little bit not mainstream. You're not dismissing them. But again, they are not competing with mainstream in your mind as a student of knowledge. Eventually, we will need to be sort of open-minded to positions that are defensible. When a scholar has a defensible position and shows, you know, brings, you know, on their defense for their position, We do not want to dismiss this, but as a talib ilm, you want to make sure that you get all the mainstream positions first, ingrained, and then without dismissing, without belittling other positions, you are aware of the presence of other positions, but the other positions also are not competing with the mainstream positions in your understanding, so that your foundation is based on the mainstream positions and not you have to have a solid, coherent foundation based on the mainstream positions and any eccentric position, because an eccentric position may eventually be mainstreamed. An eccentric position may eventually be mainstreamed, but that is a collective work of the ummah. The Ummah will do this collectively. Majam al-Fiqhiyya basically had mainstreamed positions that may have been eccentric at some point. So Imam Ibn Taymiyyah's positions on divorce are mainstreamed in many, many countries now. Like, they were considered eccentric by, you know, contemporary scholars at some time, three divorces counting as one. This was considered an eccentric position at some point. But then it had been eventually mainstreamed. That's basically the law in you know, most of the countries I know of. The idea here is for you to just understand them. So when we talk about the conditions of validity of the Niyyah, you want to remember Islam and Islam Aql and Tamyiz and the knowledge of the intended. And then, so you want to remember this. And then you may also, if you're able to remember that some scholars said Islam really is not required for a Niyyah to be considered, because we do consider the Niyyah of a non-Muslim in their divorce, in their sales, in their vows, you know, in multitudes of issues, in, you know, the kafarat, in, you know, the ghusl of the kitabiyya and all of that stuff. If you are able to keep to remember this as well, that's fine. But the base, the foundation is, what are the requirements of a valid niyyah? Islam, aqd, tamyiz, knowledge of the intended. Wa adam al munafi, absence of nullifiers. What are the requirements of a valid niyyah? Islam, aqd, tamyiz, knowledge of the intended, absence of nullifiers. Adam al munafi, al Islam wal aql wat tamyiz wal ilm bil manwi wa adam al munafi. Okay. So the final thing that we will discuss here is as-sakran. As-sakran. Sakran is the drunk person, the person who lost his aql or his reason by drinking. So as-sakran, or the intoxicated, sakran. So sakran, there are two different types of sakran. So sakran that is not sinful, no sin. Sakran that is sinful. What's the difference between the sakran that's non-sinful and the sakran who's sinful? This guy, he's old enough, some people here, gets into, something to drink, thought he's drinking juice or drinking whatever, and he's not even able to tell them apart by taste. And he keeps on drinking that juice until he gets intoxicated. Some people have never tasted wine. Have never tasted wine. So this could happen to some people. So this is non-sinful. This is a person who is given medicine. This is a person who was prescribed medicine that just made him lose it, or under the effect of some medication or coming out of anesthesia or something. So this would be non-sinful sakran, non-sinful intoxicated. How do we treat him? We don't hold him accountable. We don't hold him accountable. And he should not be held accountable. Now, the problem is the sinful sakran. What do we do with them? So they treated him. They were very hard on him because it's just like he did it to himself. He brought it on himself. So yujruna min al-ahkami ma alayhi duna ma lahu. So do you know the mumayyiz child, the discerning child? We did not mention this. Discerning child. What's the difference between discerning and non-discerning child and adult? Non-discerning, discerning, adult. So one, non-discerning. Two, discerning. Three adults. Do you have anything else? No, you don't. So non-discerning, 0 to 7. According to al-madhab, we said that some of the scholars said it varies. According to the madhab, 0 to 7. 7 to puberty, discerning. Puberty onwards, adult. What's the difference between the three? And certainly, ar-rushd is a different issue. Ar-rushd comes after puberty. This is basically when you are given your wealth because you can dispose of it properly and stuff like this. But we're not talking about this. We're just talking about the validity of deeds here and the validity of qurbat, the acts of worship, and so on. For the non-discerning, al-qalam la yajri lahu wa la alayhi. So it means that the deeds, al-qalam is the pen, so nothing is being recorded for him or against him, with the exception of Hajj and Umrah, as we said. They will be recorded for him. That's the non-discerning. discerning what is with a discerning child, يجري له ولا يجري عليه. القلم يجري, deeds will be recorded for them, not against them. If they do good deeds, because they have the capacity to intend the good, their نية is now valid, because تمييز الشرط, not puberty, لصحة النية. نية, a 10-year-old can have a good نية. We all know this. It's quite clear. You don't have to wait for puberty to have a proper niyyah. A 10-year-old can have a proper niyyah. An 11-year-old can have a proper niyyah. Okay. So يجري القلم له ولا عليه. Deeds are recorded for him, not against him. We did say there is a variant position in the Hanbali madhab that is not the dominant position. That is not the dominant position that القلم يجري له عليه. That deeds will be recorded for him and against him also. Like if a 10-year-old does something really bad, it will be recorded against them. But that is not the dominant position in the madhab, and that is not the position in the three other madhab. So this is not the dominant position. This is not the mainstream position in Islam in general. The mainstream position in Islam, defined by the mu'tamad in the four madhab, is لا يجري القلم عليه. Deeds will not be recorded against them. Okay? So now once you hit puberty, then يجري القلم لك وعليك. So the deeds will be recorded for and against the person who reached puberty. So this sinful sakran, an intoxicated person, is the opposite. يجري عليه لا له. So things will be held against him, not for him. And this is basically from our perspective here. If we're judging here in this life, from our perspective and our judgment here, we will basically hold things against him, but not for him. Meaning what? All of his qurbat will not be accepted. Because he is not, his niyya is not valid. Yet, when he messes up, it will all be held against him. And this is basically what they say here. I'll read it for you. And this is min matalib uni nuha also, this important Hanbali book. ويؤخذ السكران الذي يقع طلاقه بسائر أقواله وأفعاله وبكل فعل يعتبر له العقل فيما عليه كإقرار وقذف وظهار وإيلاء وسرقة وزنا وبيع وشراء ووقف وعارية وقبض أمانة وإسلام وردة لأن الصحابة جعلوه كالصاحي بالحد في القذف ولأنه فرط بإزالة عقله فيما يدخل فيه ضرر على غيره أو فيما يدخل فيه ضررا على غيره فألزم على حكم تفريطه عقوبة له ولا يؤاخذ فيما له بمعنى أنه لا يصح منه فعل يعود إليه نفعه كوقوف وطواف وسعي وصوم وصلاة لأنها عبادة تفتقر إلى نية والسكران ليس من أهلها. I'll read the English. A drunken person is held accountable for all their statements and actions, including those that require reason. Those that require reason. We're holding it against them. Such as confession, slander, zihar, ila, oath of abstention, theft, adultery, sale, purchase, endowment, loan, taking custody of a trust, apostasy, because the companions treated them like a sober person by implementing the had of slander. However, they are not held accountable for actions as performing tawaf, sa'i, fasting, and prayer, as these acts require intention, and the drunken person is not capable of it. So what are we doing here? نجري الأحكام عليه لا له. So that we apply the rulings against him, not for him. Anything he does bad, he's held accountable. عقوبة له, as a deterrent. As a deterrent. So that people know that if you get intoxicated, you will be charged with everything you do. You will be held accountable for everything you do if you get intoxicated. And now their proof is the Sahaba applied the Hadd of Qazf to the Sakran. When the Sahaba talked about the Hadd of the Sakran, they said, وَإِذَا هَذَفْتَرَى يُجْرَدْ حَدِّ الْمُفْتَرِي. So they say that when he becomes intoxicated, he will yahdi, or he will just speak senselessly. And when he does this, he will basically commit iftara, or you know, qazf, in you know, to accuse these people of indecency or zina. And then we should apply the hadd of qazf to him. Now, having said that, this is the position in the madhab. This is the mu'tamad of the madhab. Keep in mind that Imam Ibn Taymiyyah and people like who accept people, and many of the people who came after him, including Imam Ibn Qayyim, which we should not say it's not unexpected, because Imam Ibn Qayyim is a sort of a first-tier scholar, but he usually sided with his sheikh on most of the issues. They said that, no, he will not be held accountable. It is enough that we are applying the hadd. It's not like he's getting off the hook. He's already going to be yuhadd hadd al-sukr. He will apply the punishment of sukr. But hadd al-sukr itself does not mean that they held him accountable. They applied a punishment for the sukr itself, but not for everything that he was doing as he was sakran. So when the Sahaba punished the sakran, they applied a hadd for the very active sukr. But it's not that he, of course, itlaf, destruction, he will be responsible for his itlaf. We said that a child, an innocent child, is responsible for destroying property. So we will certainly hold the sakran responsible for destroying property, but the punishment for the sakran was meant to be for the very act of sukr. Whatever he does when he is intoxicated, even if he is sinful, it will not be held against him if it requires reason. So they did not count, most importantly, here, alaq al-sakran. So that's a position of a point of disagreement. Imam Ibn Taymiyyah did not count alaq al-sakran. He said that his divorce does not count because, you know, aql is a requirement for divorce to take place. You have to know what is intended, and you have to intend it. And even if you're sinful, we will basically نقيم الحد عليك. We will apply the hadd to you, but we will not count your divorce or the divorce that you uttered during your intoxication. And that brings us to the end of this session. I hope it was not too complicated. Next time, inshallah, we will talk about the absence of nullifiers, adam al-munafi. Conditions of the validity of the niyya are الإسلام التمييز العقل العلم بالمنوي وعدم المنافي. Islam, reason, sanity, discernment, knowledge of the intended, absence of nullifiers. We finished the first three or four, if you count them as four, and then we have عدم المنافي. عدم المنافي, absence of nullifiers, will take the next two or three lectures, because there are so many things that we will talk about, such as mixed intentions, you know, and what, you know, what happens with mixed intentions and things of that nature, or hesitation or reluctance. And we will come back at 9:30, inshallah.